Okay, we're just about to start the class. We're just going to do a quick audio check before we commence. I hope everybody's doing well today. So if you can hear the audio right now, please type in audio okay, and we'll get started. Again, once you hear the audio, just type in audio okay. Just do a brief sound check before we start the class. Okay, Gene, good to see you, South Carolina. Hope everything's going well. Okay, good to hear, Gene. Everybody else, once you start hearing the audio, please type in audio okay. Let us know that you can hear the audio. Okay, Damar, thank you very much. Hope everything's going good down there in Florida. And again, we're just going to do a brief audio check before we start the class. Make sure that all of you can hear the audio fine. So once you hear the audio, please type in audio okay at the bottom of your screen. And then we'll start the class shortly. Len in New York, good to see you again. And to all of you, again, we're just doing a brief audio check. Please type in the words audio okay. Let us know that you can hear the audio fine. Once we have a confirmation from everybody on the audio, we'll paste the text onto the window. Okay, Len, thank you. Like I was saying, once we have the confirmation from all of you on the audio, then we'll put the text in the window so you could refer to the text that we're going to be studying today. Okay, Avi in New York, Alan in Pennsylvania, Notowitz in, looks like Louisiana, Stan in Florida, Artie, California. If you could all type in audio okay, and this is also applicable to everybody else. Once you hear the audio, please type in the words audio okay at the bottom of your screen. That'll give us confirmation that you're all picking up the audio fine, and then we can start the class. Okay, Sandy, Kansas, Artie in California, thank you. Isaac in New York, Cy in New York, if you all do us a favor and just type in the words audio okay at the bottom of your screen, let us know that you're picking up the sound fine, as well as everybody else. Okay, Chaim in Illinois, Joe, South Africa, Eleanor in Washington. We're asking everybody just to confirm that you can hear the audio, so please type in audio okay at the bottom of your screen, just to confirm for us that you're picking up the audio. Thank you, Isaac. I'm in Illinois, thank you. Okay, Isaac. Shmuel in Connecticut, Sarah in Canada, Sharon in Texas, Avi in New York, Mendang in Texas. We're just doing an audio check, so please type in audio okay. Let us know that you're picking up the audio stream fine. Okay, Sai, thank you. And everybody else, please just type in audio okay. Just waiting for a few more of you to confirm. Thank you, Shmuel. That's right, Kansas. Sandy in Kansas, that's right. We don't hear any of your audio, you just hear our audio. But if you have questions as we go through the class and when we ask you to think about a point, so then we'll hopefully you'll be able to type in at the bottom if you have any ideas on what we're discussing. Okay, Steve and also Fred in Michigan, we're just doing an audio check, so please type in audio okay. Again, this applies to everybody else. If you did not type it in yet, we're just trying to get confirmation that everybody can hear the audio fine. Looks like everything is fine today.
Hey, Steve.
Thank you, Daryl. Good to see you. All right, Steve, New York, Sharon in Texas, just type in audio okay. Let us know that you're picking up the audio. Okay, Steve, thank you. Joe, South Africa, thank you. Velvila, thank you. Okay, we'll start the class just in about 1 minute. Looks like we've got confirmation from most of you on the audio. Okay, Rivka in New York, thank you, good to see you. Washington, you're saying that audio is cutting in and out. So why don't we just do, excuse me, let's just do one more round of audio confirmation. If everybody's hearing smooth audio, please type in audio OK2. This applies to everybody now. We just want to make sure that there's no problems from our end. There may be some disruption in your local areas. But in terms of what we can control, that would just be what we're broadcasting. So we're just asking everybody now to type in the words audio okay if the audio stream is consistent and clear. So this applies to everybody. Please type in audio OK2. That would confirm for us that you're getting a audio that is clear and with no interruptions. Okay. To those of you that are having some interruptions, just check your connections. You may want to exit and then come back in. That's only if you have any interruptions, any problems with the audio. All right, it looks like we have confirmation. Okay, so why don't we start the class? And we'll just put the text on so this way you can see what we're referring to. Okay, we just put the text in red on your screen. You may want to copy the text and put it onto like a notepad or some sort of just a text file and put that up on your screen so this way as more entries go into the text area, it won't disappear from sight, and this way you can refer back and forth to the text. Alrighty. Alright, so today we're going to be discussing King Solomon's Proverbs, and this is actually a follow-up on what we were discussing last week on Hanukkah. The idea we had discussed is Rav Huna's statement that if a person is careful with the lights of Shabbos and Hanukkah, so then he'll have children that are wise. And we explain that to mean that why Shabbos and Hanukkah? Why are those the two areas that if a person's careful with, that they'll have wise children? The reason we said is because the concepts embodied in Shabbos and in Hanukkah are two primary ideas about the Creator, about God. Shabbos is the day which commemorates creation, so it gives us the correct idea about God. I mean, before all else, and the most primary idea we must have about God is that He is the Creator, that there's nothing else that's responsible for the universe, all that we see, all the laws that we see, and all the whole physical world. That's one concept about God. But there's another concept, and that is that not only did God create the universe and all the laws, but He will intervene and suspend those laws and create miracles for the sake of saving mankind or for punishing mankind. So it gives us two concepts, that God is the Creator, and also that He, not only does He set up the natural laws, that they work in a fixed fashion according to precise formulations, but that at times He will also suspend those laws, either for the sake of punishing man or for saving man. So this is why, if a person is very careful with Shabbos and with Hanukkah, so then these ideas that he has about the Creator, he will impart to his children, and they'll end up being wise. Now now Rashi had commented on this rabbi's statement. It was Rav Huna who made that statement, and Rashi commented and says that it's actually a verse in the Torah. Rashi wanted to show that the idea of Rav Huna is really rooted in a verse, and that's the last verse that we put on the screen. That's for command is a flame and Torah is light. It's actually just the first part of that verse. So if you look on the screen, you'll see number 23 in red, in the last entry in red, you'll see it says, for a command is a flame, meaning the commands of Shabbos lights and Hanukkah lights. They're flames. So Rashi wants to say that the idea of Rav Huna is referring to this pasuk, this verse, that which commands are flames, the flame of Shabbos and the flame of Hanukkah. And if a person is careful with that, then he'll have the second part of that verse, which says, Torah is light. Meaning, if you're careful with the flames of Shabbos and Hanukkah, then you'll have Torah, which is light. That means to say that you'll have children that are luminaries of Torah. They will light up the world with their wisdom. Okay, so that was the verse. But in order to understand that verse, we have to really see how it's, you know, what the context is. So let's take the first verse that we quoted. It's Proverbs, it's chapter 6, and it's verse 20. And it's the first verse on your screen. And it reads as follows. My son, guard the mitzvahs, the commands of your father, and do not forsake the Torah of your mother. And again, whenever we study the Torah, we understand that this is all divinely inspired. The entire five books of Moses, the Chumash, or the Torah, as referred to it, is all word for word what God commanded Moses to write. And the same thing applies to prophets. The given, whether it was Samuel or Joshua or Ezekiel, whoever wrote down a given work on prophets, that also is divinely inspired, as well as with writings. For example, Proverbs, which is the writings of King Solomon. But all three areas, Torah and prophets and writings, are precisely formulated and they're divinely inspired. So that means when we study these words, we have to be very, very careful and very meticulous about what we read. And by doing so, we'll be able to derive really great insights. So the first verse is, again, the King Solomon is saying, my son, you should guard the commands of your father and do not forsake the Torah of your mother. So right off the bat, you see that King Solomon is referring to two areas of knowledge. All right, he's referring to mitzvos, the commands of your father, and also the Torah of your mother. Now, what this is referring to is the actual commands of the Torah, and the moral disciplines of the Torah. Okay. And before we just go further, let's just make sure that everybody's picking up the sound for it. excuse me, sorry. Just let's make sure the sound is still continuing. Just want to do one more check on the sound. So if you're hearing the sound fine, because somebody wrote before there was some interruption in the sound, just please type in the audio okay. Okay, so once again, if your sound is fine, just type in audio okay. And we'll just pick up. I'm not sure why there was that session expired. It looks like I experienced it as well. I'm not sure why there was a expired session. Okay, let's just wait for everybody to log back on. Okay, so that was one idea. that the Torah is really, there's two parts. There's the written law, and there's also the moral instruction. So in both areas, we're told to be careful. But you look at the language that he uses. He uses the language of guard the commands and don't forsake the Torah. So we have to understand why he says it that way. Why does he say specifically to guard the commands? But when it comes to Torah, which he is referring to moral discipline, meaning instruction about morality, so then there has to be, he uses the term of do not forsake. So that's the question I'd like to put to you right now. Why is it in terms of the 613 commands King Solomon advises his son, and he says that you should guard the commands, but when it comes to moral instruction, then you should not forsake it? So that's a question we're dealing with right now. Okay, so everybody think about that for a moment. If you all have the question, you can just type audio okay. Excuse me, just type in okay if you have the question, just to make sure that I see that all of you have the question. Okay, I'm just going to put the text back on the screen again. So this way everybody has it. All right, Steve, Jean, thank you. Sandy, Artie, okay, good, everybody's got the question. Okay, so let's just take a moment to think about that question. Now keep in mind as well that the reason why you have two areas, you have commands and you have moral instruction. Can anybody suggest a reason why King Solomon is only addressing those two? Why does he only talk about commands, and why does he only talk about moral instruction? So there's really two questions I'm posing to you now. Question is why we have specifically the term to guard in connection with commands, and then the term do not forsake in connection with moral discipline, with morality. Alright, Sandy, I see your entry there. We'll take it in a minute. Let's get everybody else a chance to think it through. right. Does everybody have both questions? Just let me know if you all have both questions. Okay, Shosh. Okay, Artie. The two questions are, once again, this view of Medang in Texas. The question is, number one, what are the two areas that King Solomon is referring to here? He only talks about commands and moral instruction. Why are those the only two that he's referring to? And the second question is the specific counsel that he gives to each one of those is different. He says to guard the commands, whereas he says not to forsake moral instruction. So we're trying to understand what these two categories are, and also why this type of an advice, a counsel. Why is the counsel that he's giving different in each case? Just in a moment, I'll just take the entries that a couple of you have suggested. Okay, so Sandy is suggesting that commands cover things that are predictable, whereas moral instruction gives you a basis for making decisions when we don't have a black and white situation. Okay, I don't see where you get that from, but I'll comment on it as follows, that there are many commands that aren't predictable. For example, a person wouldn't know that he should wear black boxes on his head and his arm, meaning tefillin. And moral instruction, I mean, all the commands and the moral instruction are for areas that we would be ignorant of without it. We would not know a majority of the Torah without it. Steve in New York is suggesting that moral instruction is the specifics of the mitzvah and the practical details. Okay, that's regarding mitzvahs, but why would you say guarding the mitzvah? It's true, the commands are the specific mitzvahs, and the moral instruction is, there are many mitzvahs that are moral instruction too, like not stealing, not killing. Okay, Artie in California is asking a good question. Why are the commands from the father and Torah from the mother? That I would address by saying that the image of a father and the mother should convey something to us, that father is more of a strong figure, whereas mother is more usually used in terms of like a softer, pacifying, and nurturing image. So in terms of the commands, these are discrete. These are the actual obligations. So it's used in a more forceful term. We also see in the beginning of Mishlei where, I think it's Rashi, I'm not sure which one of the rabbis said it, but they refer to the Torah as more like the father, meaning Moshe, Rabbeinu Moses, and the rabbi is the mother, meaning the ones that had given the rabbinic injunctions afterwards. So again, that's referring to the Torah as more of the core of the system, and then the rabbinical laws, which are also equally part of the Torah, but they're not the 613. But to answer the first question, the reason you only have two areas that King Solomon is addressing here is because there are only two areas. There's only two areas in which man functions in his life, and that's either intelligence or his emotions. Now, both of them have to be addressed. In terms of intelligence, that's a positive knowledge area, meaning that you have to be taught new ideas, and that's how you, that's exactly what the Torah is to function, to give you new positive concepts, whether they're positive commands or negative commands. That's in terms of understanding truths. But understanding truths alone is not going to be sufficient if a person does not address the other half of his being, and that is his emotions. Now, the emotions are necessary. That's why God gave them to us. But they have to be addressed themselves in terms of restraining yourself and working on your character traits, because knowledge is just half the game. If a person doesn't apply the knowledge and follow it through in his action in his life, so really the activity of man is the barometer for his values. A person you see may say, I think it's great to give charity, but you never see him give a penny in his life. You know that there's something awry, there's something amiss in his personality. He may verbally say, hey, I value giving charity to the poor. Well, if he values it so much, why is he not giving the charity? So you see, it's essential that man acts, and he has the reason. Now the question is, why isn't this person acting? Why is a person who values charity so much intellectually, he sees the good in it, but he doesn't do it? Well, the answer is going to be that if it is clear to him in terms of the knowledge aspect, his intelligence grasps that idea that it's very important that there should be charity, but he doesn't follow through in action, we have to attribute it to a certain emotional aversion to parting with his money or for some other reason emotionally. Because if a person has the knowledge clearly, something as simple and clear as the value of charity, but he does not give the charity, that's attributed to a certain emotional breakdown. So there's a lack of connection between what his mind tells him is true and what he does in his life. So you see, what's necessary in life is not only to have the intelligence, but there has to be the application. And that will have to come from working on a person's own emotions and bringing them in line. And the way you work on it is by the more you see something clear and true, That should result in your actions following suit. If your actions don't follow suit, then you have to start examining what emotional constraints you have, what emotional blocks you have against whatever the area is. Okay, let me just take a look and see what a couple of you have written. Daryl is writing, just as a flame is what makes up the light, so too commands what makes up the Torah. Okay, Daryl, why don't you elaborate on that more? Sandy is saying, perhaps predictable was a difficult term, but commands must always be carried out. That's what I meant by predictable. Moral instruction trains us to deal with parts of life for which there are no commands. Again, I disagree with that, because we do see moral instruction for many areas. But the other question we have is, why does King Solomon say guard the commands? But then when he talks about the moral instruction, he says, don't forsake them. See, this follows through with our idea, because moral instruction is something which goes against the grain of a person naturally. A person naturally wants to follow his own feelings. Everybody has their own set of feelings. I mean, we all have the same faculties. We all have the ability to hate, to love. We all have the desire to steal. We all have the desire to put somebody down. These are all natural tendencies. But what we have to do is work on them through our life and control them. But you don't want, a lot of times a person, most cases, a person does not want to hear any rebuke. So he runs away from it. He forsakes it. So King Solomon is attacking what the idea is. And that is that a person will want to abandon anything morally instructing. He wants to have his emotions to run free. That's the whole definition of the emotions, is a person wants to just satisfy whatever instincts are at the time. So he wants to run away from the moral instruction. He wants to forsake it. So that's why King Solomon says, don't forsake it. In terms of the commands, however, the commands are positive. They address the positive, they're positive elements. And they address the person's intelligence. And therefore, you have to guard them. You have to understand what they are and to guard them and to keep them. Okay, so let's just make sure that everybody understands the distinction between the two statements. One is addressing the intelligence, that's one half of man, and the other statement about not forsaking moral discipline, that's addressing man's emotions. So if you have that distinction clear, let's just type an okay on the screen. Let me know that you can hear it clearly, that you have the idea clearly. Michael, that's correct. So let's just confirm that everybody has that distinction. Just type a OK on the screen. Let me know that you have that clearly. There's two things that we discussed. One is that there are two parts to the human nature, intelligence and the emotions. So the Torah addresses both. The Torah gives you positive commands, and when you study the commands and you start unraveling each one, it's a long process, but there's a tremendous amount of knowledge. You have to realize that this knowledge is coming from God. And King Solomon says that as well. So if you have that recognition that the knowledge is coming from God, so then you're going to really go into it and study it clearly. And then when you start seeing the ideas, they'll imbue us with insight and appreciation and teach us new ideas. But that's in terms of our appreciation, in terms of the intelligence that God permeated the world with. Okay. All right, thanks, Gene, Michael, Shosh, Artie, Steve. Okay, Michael. Okay, Tamara, thank you. Jerry. And Daryl. All right, good. Okay. So now we understand the two components of man's nature, and that's why King Solomon is addressing two different areas. Let's take the next verse, 21. I'll read it to you because it looks like it disappeared from screen already. King Solomon goes on and he says, unless you have any questions at this point. If there's any questions, maybe I'll just wait a minute and see if any of you have a question on what we said. If not, then we'll move on to verse 21. I just pasted the next verse on your screen. That's what we'll refer to next. But let me just wait a moment to see if any of you have any questions. If not, we'll move on to the next verse. Okay, it looks like it's clear to everybody. What's the next verse say? The next verse says, look on your screen, it says, tie them on your heart often, bind them on your neck. Meaning he's now referring to the both entities that he was talking about, both elements, the commands and the moral instructions that Torah gives you. So he's saying what you have to do now is not only guard them and not forsake them, but you now have to do something else. Tie them on your heart often and bind them on your neck. What do you think this statement means? And what would be your questions on the statement? It's always a good thing is to try to analyze the statement, analyze the verse, and see what jumps out at you in terms of what the questions might be. Because again, these words, they may sound on the surface level like, oh, they're very clear, I understand them. But they're not written that way. They're written in order to drive us towards thinking about them. So what would be your questions on this verse? Tie them on your heart and bind them on your neck. Sandy, no. When it says tie them on your heart and bind them on your neck, well, it could be. But I would suggest not to introduce that unless we have reason to. Because you're suggesting does tie and bind refer respectively to commands and moral instruction. I would suggest that it's referring to both. Unless you see a reason to make a distinction, I would say what he just talked about in verse 20, meaning both commands and the moral instruction of the Torah. So now these are things that both of them you should tie to your heart, and both of them you should bind in your neck. All right? Okay, Gene, right, heart equals the emotions, correct. Jerry is suggesting that it's saying the same thing in two parallel ways. Well, there has to be a reason. If you're going to go that approach, Jerry, you have to give a reason for it. Okay, Daryl is asking a very good question. Why the two different terms of tying and binding? Okay, that's a good question. Sandy is saying only that he has broken them into two in the early part of the saying. Daryl is writing, Nick is like a yoke to be controlled. Well, there could be something else. I mean, the commentaries actually, I think, allude to the throat. So you have to think about the that location. The location of the heart and the location of the throat. What do those two parts of the human body have in terms of a parallel? What are they a metaphor for? And why isn't one enough? Why can't you just say, just bind them on your heart? That's it. Or tie them to your heart. Okay, Jerry, very good. Neck means moral instruction. Throat equals speech. Right, so we're talking here about, I would agree with you, speech. Meaning the neck, the throat, specifically, and you know, has the exclusive correlation to human speech. Okay, well, if that's true, so that means what King Solomon is saying is that we should take these laws and the moral discipline of the Torah, and we should tie them to our heart and to our throat. So, what is the message? What's the necessity for both? What's this idea of binding them to the heart? So if you want to start off by saying, okay, you have to tie them to your emotions, meaning he's taking it a step further, and he's stating that not only do you have to listen to the commands intelligently, and you shouldn't forsake the moral instruction, but now comes in the next step. The next step is, how do you follow through in your daily life? You have to follow through with now applying them in terms of your own value system, your heart, what you value. The heart is really the seat. It's used different ways. Sometimes the heart refers to intelligence, sometimes it refers to the emotions. Here I believe it's talking about the person's being. It really comprises both, that he should tie them to his heart, meaning it's not sufficient that you study and that it becomes just an abstract, because you see a lot of people are very they appreciate the Torah ideals and the laws, but it's not part of who they are. It's something that they do. They may study out of a certain amount of guilt, or they may study because they want to be called a scholar. But if they're not studying and then really applying it to themselves as their real value system, then they're missing the boat. They're missing what the real goal is. Okay, let me just look and see what you're writing. Sandy is suggesting that it's interesting to think about how to accept or tie commands to your heart. Commands need to be done regardless of the emotions about them. True, but when King Solomon is saying tie them to your heart, that means this is something which they should never be removed. And it's true, they really have to be bound. I agree that sometimes that a person has to do these things regardless of his feelings about them. But the optimum is that a person values these ideas and they become part of himself. Otherwise, what is the value? What is if a person doesn't value it himself, and he does it, you know, very reluctantly, so it's not really a value system. It's not something which he really values. So he hasn't benefited his soul. Okay, Gene is suggesting it's applying to what you say and what you feel. Okay, well, I want to take that up, Gene. Keep them personally and tell others is what Jerry is saying. Michael wants to say not just what we feel, yet what we do or we say. Good. Michael, you're in sync with what Gene is saying. I want to expand on that. Sandy, again, is saying, in the end, you want to love the commands. Right. Daryl is suggesting that they are in our emotions and a way of believing as well as teaching to others by speech. True. But what about the Daryl? I'd ask you, what about if there's nobody else around? This still would it would seem to be that this is still applicable. You could argue the point with me on that, but I think that what Michael and Gene were saying is that there's really two steps, and we touched on this earlier, and that is, what is the barometer for a person's perfection? What did we say about 10 minutes ago? What is the barometer for a person's perfection? How do we know when a person's really perfected? Do you remember what we said? We said there's a barometer for a person's perfection. Not just what his intelligence sees as true, but it has to follow through with what? Correct, Daryl. They have to act as they speech, as they speak. And Lee says, when his actions match the commands. Sandy is saying the same thing. Very good. Exactly. Meaning to say that King Solomon's point in this specific verse is to tell you that they should become your values. Meaning, step one is to learn them. Both areas: intelligent laws and moral discipline. Step two, they should be bound to your heart. They should be values. But you can't just stop there. They have to follow through an activity, meaning expression. And speech is one of the most primary expressions that people are involved with all the time. That is something which is really a true barometer of a person's values. So if he speaks about it, and he engages in activity, and he's drawn to the ideas, so that shows that it's really made the impact on him. Okay? So you need to have both. All right. And speech as well is something else, because speech is really a reflection of a person's thoughts. So that would really combine both. Speech is really combining both action and also his intelligence. That one activity, because speech is when you're communicating, like Daryl was saying before, you're teaching others as well. Steve is writing, but speech doesn't necessarily ensure action. True. But without speech, you certainly know that the person is just not valuing what he studied. But if you see a person is speaking, so that shows that, and he's speaking in these areas, that means it's something that catches his mind. That means it's something which he's drawn to. It also shows a certain level of involvement. I mean, it's a good question. Why doesn't he say that? I mean, you can ask the question, why doesn't King Solomon say that you should tie them to your heart and bind them on your hands? Something of that nature. That's a good question. Okay, tomorrow is following through with the idea. Out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. But it's a good question that what Steve is mentioning, that why don't you say that he's got to do the action? That would really be a true barometer. That's a good question. Let me think about that for a moment. It's true what you're all writing. Jay is suggesting the actions are supposed to be done from the heart. True. And God created us with speech. True. But if what I'm saying is correct, it would be more accurate, according to what Steve was saying, that, you know, why limit it to speech? I mean, speech doesn't necessarily mean you're going to follow, doesn't ensure that there will be actions. I have to think about that question, Steve. It's a good question. I mean, it could possibly be that this whole section is dealing, and you'll see the next verse also, it's all dealing with the laws. It's all dealing with Torah study and applying it to the self. So therefore, speech would be the only appropriate follow-through. I mean, the truth is that the actions of the Torah, the mitzvos, Maimonides says, are to keep us, keep our mind occupied when we're not involved in Torah study, because Torah study is the greatest command. The Gemara says this, the Talmud says that Torah study is the greatest command. Nothing matches it. And that's also taken from the words of King Solomon in this book, Proverbs. He says, V'kol chafetzim lo yishvu ba, which means to say that any desirous thing does not equate to Torah study. And the rabbis and the Gemara say, what does it mean, any desirous thing doesn't equate to Torah study? They're including even the other commands, even the other 612 commands, which are called desirous things, even they do not equate to Torah study, meaning Torah study is the most elevated and prized activity and the most important command that man can be involved in. So it could be that is why he's only talking here about speech, meaning because he's limiting it to a discussion on the study of Torah itself, and that's broken up into positive ideas, those are the commands, and also moral instruction. Then that's in verse 20. In 21, he talks about how you should take these ideas and bind them to yourself so now they become part of your value, but then follow through with expression. You can't just have the values in your heart, but you're not expressing it. By a human being is a sensual creature, and there has to be expression. That really is the barometer for a person's perfection, what he values. So since we're only limiting the discussion to Torah study, therefore the only expression of Torah study is speech. So that, I would suggest that might be an answer to Steve's question. Okay. It's true, Steve, the community seems to appreciate and censure action. Correct. But our discussion right now that King Solomon's talking about in these four verses is limited to Torah study itself. Jay in Florida is mentioning that if a priest, a Kohen, doesn't have the proper intention when he performs the offerings, the sacrifices, so then it defiles the sacrifice. That's correct. And Daryl's mentioned a good point too, that it's a two-way street. The power of speech will imbue the heart. And the more you hear a Torah study, the more one will take it to heart. It works both ways. It's true, when you're engaged in speech, it also has an effect in terms of your emotions. And Tamara suggesting that life and death are in the power of the tongue. All right, that's getting more drushy or metaphoric for me. I want to try to stay more rooted in the words. And Sandy is suggesting, I think speech creates an announcement of sorts that something is desirable behavior, and others may hear it, and then you will be compelled because of announcing to carry out. Others will feel compelled to follow. I wouldn't go with that route, Sandy, because we're talking about the person himself, so I would not bring in other people into the equation. That's not, you don't see that King Solomon is doing that. So to really understand his ideas, we have to stay true to his words and not convolute what he's stating with anything else. He's not mentioning other people in the equation, so we should not introduce other people. It should just be a person by himself. That's what he's talking about. This is an individual. He's saying, Bini, my son. Okay. Okay, so if that is clear, we'll move on to the next verse. Just type okay in your window. Let me know that everything is clear, that you got the ideas, before we move on to the next verse. You're seeing the order so far. In verse 20, he's telling you what you must do, and in 21, he says how you apply it. So you see that there's an order to the verses. First, he tells you what you must do, and then he says how you must apply it. Now we'll have to see what verse 22 deals with. That's a separate idea, Jay. Separate idea. Well, Sandy, you could be involved in Torah study on your own. That's what he means to say, Torah study. When you're speaking it, when you learn the Torah study, when you discuss it. But again, it's for the self. It's not for others who hear it. There may be added benefits, but I don't see that, it's coming from this verse. Okay, does everybody have it? It's clear? Just type an okay on your screen if it's clear. If there's any questions on this verse before we move on, now's the time to ask. Okay, Steve's, Sandy, Jean, Medeng, Michael, Shosh, Artie, Jay. Okay, Tamar. Okay, I see that Lee in Texas, Lay in Washington, Michael in British Columbia, and Benjamin in NZL. I don't know where that is, but welcome to all of you. Okay, they're all good. Okay, so let's move on to the next verse. The next verse is just as interesting as the previous ones. Okay, let me just put that up on your screen, so this way you can see what I'm referring to. Okay, take a look at your screen. You'll see in the red type the next verse. When you walk, it will guide you. When you repose, meaning when you lie down, it will guard you. And when you awake, it will converse with you. Okay, Benjamin, nice to see you from New Zealand. Okay. Alright, so now King Solomon says another verse. Now he says a new idea. He says, when you walk, it, meaning the Torah's ideas, will guide you. When you repose, when you lie down before you go to sleep, it will guard you. And when you awake, it will converse with you. Okay. What is he talking about? Well, Daryl, it's not exactly the Shema because it's lying down and rising up is the Shema. Here it says when you walk, unless you want to refer to v'lechtecha b'derech, when you walk on your way. Then you're correct. But you got to take it a step further. But it's good parallel that you're bringing up. That the Shema also, the Shema itself, and it's a good point, the Shema itself carries these three ideas. It contains this idea about when you go on your way, when you lie down, when you rise up. It also adds in when you're sitting in your house. There's other things it does too. Benjamin in New Zealand. Can you converse with the book? No. But here it says that it will talk to you. It will converse with you. Meaning the knowledge that you have studied will converse with you when you wake up. Yes, that's a difficult statement. What does it mean? Alright, Madang is writing a guide during action and protection during idleness. Okay, good. That's the route we should take. Tamar is suggesting the scripture is a lamp or a compass. It will show you the way to go. That's general, good, but now we have to break it down to the specifics. What does it mean when you walk it will guide you? Meaning again, just like in the beginning, we were asking what was the term that King Solomon joins to each one of the states. Now here you see there are three, if you want to define what this verse is talking about, it's talking about three states of a human being. When you walk, walking means in your everyday life, when you're awake and you're going about your day. When you lie down, all right, that's another state. And when you rise up in the morning, that's another state. But what is significant about these three states? That's the question I'd like you to think about right now. What is significant about when you're walking and doing your business during the day? Number two, when you're lying down. And number three, when you're rising up. Why only these three states? What is he trying to elucidate over here? Okay, Jay, that you'd have to give me a source for. You're saying an angel is created every time we do a mitzvah. I don't understand what that means. I've heard that before, but I don't understand. Certainly, it's not literal, but it would be important to see a source, too, to have it accurate. Okay, Benjamin, the Shema is one of the most basic prayers that we say every day. We rise up and we lie down. Okay, Daryl, right. Meaning to say, these three states of when you're going on your way, in your waking state, and then when you lie down, and then when you rise up in the morning. So you want to suggest is no, these are the only three states of man. Well, the truth is, there is one more state. But why is King Solomon only talking about, what is significant about these three states? What I really want you to think about is, what is significant about the three states he's talking about. When you're awake during the day, and then number two, lying down, and number three, rising up. What is the significance? It's true, Madang. It's guiding during your actions. True. But there's more to it. Yes, Tamar, scripture is always applicable. But what are these three states? What is significant about these three states? Let's put it this way. These are three states of X. What is X? What is significant about lying down? And what's significant about rising up? That should give you a hint. Specifically lying down. What happens when a person lies down at night to go to sleep? I'll give you another hint. Why is it that our morning prayers are so much longer than the afternoon prayers in the evening? Afternoon prayers can take you 5-10 minutes. Evening prayers also, 5-10 minutes, that's it. Morning prayers take you about a half an hour. Okay, Daryl wants to say rising is to set your full day. You got to elaborate on that, Daryl. Life versus death tomorrow? I don't know what you mean. I mean, we're not talking about a person dying here. Although one of the commentaries does want to say that. He wants to say that when you walk during the day, he's referring to that if you keep the Torah, it'll guard you, it'll guide you when you're alive, walking during the day. It'll guard over you when you're lying down. That means death. And then it'll speak to you when you rise up, meaning rising up is in the next world. So that is one of the commentaries who says that. All right? That is Rashi. Okay, so Rashi says what you're saying, Tamar. But let's just go more literal. I mean, he's talking about your person's life. Okay, Steve is saying a good point. Moving between states of consciousness. Okay, Steve, take that a step further. Why is King Solomon advising us about different states of consciousness? Well, Sandy, you're saying that it's different states of mind, physically busy, mentally and physically checked out, or mentally open-minded. I would take his words literal in terms of lying down means going to sleep, rising up means rising up in the morning. Okay, but besides Rashi's explanation, let's see if we can just add, you know, answer it in the pshat. You always have to have, I mean, there's a statement of the rabbis, Ein mikra yotzi mide pshuto, which means that a verse still must have a literal meaning. So let's get the literal meaning, the pshat. What is the basic level, what is he saying over here? Before we go into elaborate things that maybe we don't have the support for, see, what I think it means like this, is that there are three states regarding something. Like you could say, you could talk about man as having many states, but it's regarding regarding what? For example, regarding humor, a person can be laughing or not laughing. Regarding talking, a person is either talking or not. But now King Solomon is saying regarding something, there are three states. See, I think the something that he's referring to here is your man's relationship to knowledge. Since he just told us that we should be careful to follow the commands and also the moral discipline and also bind it on our heart and in our speech, now he says that if you do this, there will be a positive result in three areas. What's the positive result? The positive result is within man's relationship to ideas. Because in terms of man, and I mean man and woman when I say man, but in regards to man relating to Torah, to the ideas, there are three different states of relationship to that. There's this full conscious waking state when he's walking. In that case, King Solomon says it will guide you. It'll guide your life. But then a person lies down at night to go to sleep. What happens to his relationship to his intelligence at night? See, he starts to lose a grip on it. Because sleep itself is where you slip away from having any conscious control, and you're totally unconscious. Meaning you're not being, you're not following your intelligence anymore. Dreams are so hard to remember because the emotions are just flying past each other, pushing forward in your unconscious to express themselves. And this type of a state is purely emotional. Okay? So it's important to understand that the state of sleep is where a person starts to lose a grip on the emotions. So that's the second state. The first state is where you're totally in control. So what does he say? King Solomon says, it will guide you. The Torah will guide you. That makes sense. That one's the easiest one to explain. But then he says, when you lie down to go to sleep at night, it will guard you. Why does he say it'll guard you at night? And then in the morning, when you rise up again, that's another state. Meaning now, that's the opposite of going to sleep. Going to sleep is when you're losing a grip on the intelligence, when your intellect is now not under your control anymore. When you rise up in the morning, now that's when you first come back into control with the intelligence. I mean, that's when you reenact a relationship. You reinitiate your relationship with your intelligence in the morning. So that's also a significant state. So it ends up there's three states in terms of man being involved in his intelligence. Either he's in complete control of his intelligence, that's when he's in his waking state, or he starts to lose it, that's going to sleep, or he starts to regain it, that's waking up in the morning. Okay, so you see, that's why King Solomon is talking about three states over here. Because there are only three. I mean, it's true, there is a fourth state. That's the state of sleep itself. But then we're not even involved. There's no relationship then at that point. Now, regarding these three states, he says, if a person studies during his life and he makes Torah an essential part of his day, so then there is going to be a positive result. Now we have to understand, now that we know the facts of what he's talking about, we know that King Solomon is isolating the three exclusive states of man's relationship with wisdom, where he's in control, where he starts to lose it at night, and in the morning where he starts to regain it. Now, since there are those three clear states in terms of our relationship with wisdom, King Solomon says that if you do study during your life, then the Torah study that you have will benefit you in one of three ways. It will guide you when you're awake, it will guard you at night, and it will speak to you in the morning. I want you to stop and think about what that is. Okay? What is the difference between the statement? I'm putting it on screen again so you can look at it. When you walk, it will guide you. When you lie down, it will guard you. And when you awake, it will converse with you. So let's understand, why does it guide you when you're awake? Why does it guard you when you're falling asleep? And why does it talk with you when you're waking up? What is King Solomon getting at here? That's the question to think about now. Okay, if you all have the question, type OK in the window. Sandy, you shouldn't take it personally in terms of being suggested that I disagree with what you're saying. That's part of the learning process. If you want to clarify what you're saying, feel free to, again. But, I mean, part of learning is when I learn my study partners... it's back and forth disagreement. It's not a personal thing. Okay, Benjamin David, the word of God should be wisdom. Yes, I've heard people say that Jesus is the word of God. That means we could talk with the scriptures because they've been made a person. Yes, that is foolishness, Benjamin. Okay. The Torah is your consciousness. I'm not sure what you mean, Steve. Daryl is suggesting before you sleep is when the mind is most tired and needs a guard. I wouldn't say it's tired. There's something more to it. Okay. Olivia in Texas, we're just taking up questions now on the topic, okay? Hey, Daryl, I agree. When you awake, you need to be the first thing to talk to you. But the question is, what does he mean by that? It talks to you when you wake up. RL in New York, the Spirit of God within you. I know what you mean, but we don't say that there is a Spirit of God within us. We say we have intelligence, we have a soul. But there's no part of God in man. I mean, God created man's soul. It's a creation. It's not a part of him. Okay, Daryl, yeah, you're at night, you're at risk of emotional thoughts. Right, because now you're slipping away. So that's good. That explains why at night King Solomon says it will guard you. Meaning to say that since at night is the state where your intelligence, your attachment to truth is now slipping away, since you're now going into an emotional state of sleep, and now the emotions are going to have the upper hand, so now what you should do is, you should, and we actually, the Torah says that we're supposed to say the Shema on our bed at night before we go to sleep. So we should guard ourselves, but the actual attachment, what King Solomon is saying over here is that without you doing anything else, if you're a person who studies and values what you're studying, so then what he's saying is that in these three states you will have an added benefit. One added benefit is that it'll guide you during your regular daily activities. Because since you're involved in intelligence, since you're involved in study and Torah study, your mind becomes sharper. And it also starts to value the good. And then as you go out through your day, every day of your life, you start making better choices because your mind is sharper. You can make clearer decisions in every area. Plus, you're being emotionally guarded because of the laws that tell you how to restrain yourself from doing things that are incorrect. So that's how it guides you during the day. That's clear. That makes sense. How does it guard you at night? Yes, because at night, when you're about to fall asleep and the emotions start to get the upper hand, now you will be more equipped to battle them because your values have been strengthened during the day, and you'll have less of a tendency to give in, to relinquish your values at night. Because since you've strengthened your values during your waking day, you'll be more that strong at night when the emotions start to get the upper hand. Okay, that makes sense. What about in the morning? What does it mean in the morning will speak to you? That's the big question. Benjamin in New Zealand, yes, our emotions naturally go against what the Torah tells us. That's why we have to constrain our emotions and follow what God says, but also understanding. I mean, like I said before, the greatest mitzvah is Torah study. So when we appreciate the ideas and then we see them as true, then we want to follow them. So that therefore, we will change, but it'll be based on what our mind tells us is true. We should always be following our actions during the day based on what our mind tells us, and we should never be giving in to the emotions, because the emotions just want satisfaction. The emotions don't have the ability to choose right or wrong. That's a separate faculty inside of us. But what does it mean in the morning? What's the benefit? See, King Solomon again, keep in mind what he's doing with each verse. You have to identify what the verse is talking about just in terms of the facts. Understand now the general sense of what this verse is about, which we said is, he's talking about the added benefits that you will derive if you are studious in Torah and following God's commands. So not only will you enjoy the study during the day, and it'll be such an enjoyment to you, but it'll also help you stay on the right path. And there's three states of your existence. There's when you're awake, there's when you're lying down, and then when you're rising up. So we understand when you're awake and when you're lying down. We just explained that. How does it help me when I'm rising up? Okay, when we're sleeping, Benjamin, we're not in control of our thoughts. Okay? If a person is very perfected, yes, then God can bring a prophecy to him. And that would be a case like Joseph and Nebuchadnezzar. True. We're not saying that all people, but for the most part, the person's state of sleep is an emotional state. I mean, that applies even to Joseph and Nebuchadnezzar. I mean, Nebuchadnezzar was an evil ruler. But God was giving some information because it was necessary, but not because of Nebuchadnezzar's merit. But what is the last benefit that King Solomon is referring to when he says, and in the morning, if you're studious and you stay in line with the Torah system during your years of life, then each morning the Torah will speak to you. I mean, I don't hear the Torah talking to me in the morning. I don't know about you, but it can't mean that. So what does it mean? What is the benefit is he talking about? And what does he mean? Just what's the plain understanding of his words? Okay, that's the question. Okay, Jay, what you're writing are metaphors. You have to derive what the metaphor means there. No, Benjamin, it doesn't mean that. It doesn't mean it speaks to you. It doesn't mean when King Solomon says in the morning it will speak to you, it doesn't mean through somebody else. Okay, Michael, you're getting on the track there. Michael's saying it will guide your actions. Well, that would apply to all three parts of the verse at hand. But let's see if we can understand. What is the think about the state when you wake up in the morning? What's happening in terms of a person's disposition? You see, what's happening is that we said that that's the state where a person starts to regain consciousness. He starts to get back in touch with his intelligence, his soul. So what King Solomon is saying is that if you are attached to learning, if that becomes your real value, so then not only will it guide you in your daily activity, and not only will it guard your thoughts at night before you're going to sleep when you're starting to lose control and the emotions get the upper hand, but when you wake up in the morning, what's going to happen is that your preoccupation with the beauty and the precision of Torah and knowledge is going to become such an enjoyable thing that it's going to be as if it's talking to you in the morning. Meaning it's pulling you, it's drawing you back in. As soon as you wake up in the morning, the enjoyment that you get from Torah study, it stays with you. And as soon as you come back to consciousness in the morning, when you wake up, your mind is naturally going to gravitate towards it. As if somebody is pulling you in. See, that's why King Solomon personifies the words of the Torah as if it's talking to you in the morning. What does he mean? He's personifying the words. There's nobody there talking to you. But it means to say that since you're so drawn by the ideas of the Torah, since they're such an enjoyment when you hear a nice idea and it makes sense to you, that starts to get a greater and greater enjoyment, and then you start seeing that your mind is preoccupied with your learning, even during the day when you're at work, and at nighttime, there's more. You want to see more about the system, and your mind keeps going back to it. And he's saying this will help, this will be in the morning as well. When you start to regain consciousness in the morning, you're going to be so enthralled by the ideas that you're learning. Like a scientist in a lab, he can't wait to figure out the next experiment, to see some new ideas. So when you wake up in the morning, it's going to be as if somebody's talking to you. It acts as an additional ally to you, that it brings you back into that state in the morning, which is how you start the day. That's a significant part of your day. It's a significant part of your existence is when you first come back into consciousness. How are you going to set your day up? What are you going to be gearing towards your goal of the day? Well, you see that King Solomon says that you will start to be attracted towards the ideas as soon as you wake up in the morning, and you'll start thinking about your previous day's study, and then your mind will start wandering in other areas, because that is how God designed us. King Solomon is describing over here three states of the human personality that are benefits. God didn't just design you in a way where you like the ideas when you're studying them, but then there's no lingering effect. No, there is a very strong lingering effect. Okay? Now, what is that strong lingering effect? It's going to be an emotional pull. It even starts to attract the emotions. That's what curiosity is. You see that at the beginning of our lives, our emotions could be going towards things that are not good, but as we study and as the years go on and months go on, we'll start being attracted towards more of the ideas, and then emotionally we start getting pulled. So it's as if there is something there pulling us in the morning back. But that's our own attachment. See, King Solomon is taking the emotional attachment to study and personifying it and saying, he's saying in a metaphor, it will speak to you in the morning. Okay? Okay, so if that's clear, just type an okay on your screen. I just want to make sure that you're getting that idea clear. Correct, Tamar. When you're preoccupied with learning, it is easier not to forsake the moral law or the commandments. Correct. Yes, Benjamin. What you need to do to be attracted to wisdom is you study it more, and you ask questions. And the more you study it, we're designed in a way that the more we see truth, the more we see things that are clear, then our mind gets attracted to it, and our emotions start to follow as well. That's part of the design. That is part of the human design. That's how God made the human being. That you're going to be attracted to what your mind tells you more than what your emotions tell you. The way we're created, the Torah says, is that Yetzalev Adam Rami Neurov, that the instincts of man are evil, but only from youth. Meaning our instincts have a head start because our intelligence doesn't start getting a go on until, like, you know, you're 9, you're 10, then finally when you're 13, that's when you're really obligated in commands. Because it takes that long for the mind to really develop. So you see, the emotions have a head start. The emotions are there from youth, from infancy, from birth. So now we have a battle. And the battle's always there, but hopefully it'll get a little bit easier as we get older and we see more ideas being true, and we see how more emotions and instinctual drives should be controlled and abandoned. And as we develop more, then we'll start getting attracted to the ideas, and then we start getting more enthralled by them. So to answer your question, Benjamin David, the way you get attracted to wisdom is by study. That's the only way. There's no other path. You have to put time into it. You have to ask questions, and you'll see what is absolutely true. Your mind will value. And if you see that you're just not following through with action, then we talked about at the beginning of the class that if a person really values something but he just can't move to do it, that means it's an emotional block. And then you have to examine your emotions and undo and see why you have an emotional block. Because the emotional block means you're still valuing something else. So you have to really analyze yourself. That's not an easy thing, but you have to do it. You have to reflect. Okay, Jerry's suggesting also, the more you learn, the more connections you can make. Yes, exactly. The more insight, the more ideas you'll see related. Then you start seeing a bigger picture. And then the bigger the picture you see and how the whole world operates, then you start getting a greater appreciation. A person wants to study the Torah, I mean, it's available. I mean, that's, everybody knows what the history of the Jews is. A person doesn't. So, I mean, that's why it's an obligation for us to teach other people. You don't want another person to lose out the opportunity to learn. That's why it's a very big obligation to teach. And anybody who has that ability, you should do it. You should set up classes. You should learn with a learning partner. You should do what you can in order to educate others and bring them to the right ideas. Well, Steve, you're saying rising up in the morning and being thankful for our life is a direct experience of the study and practice of Torah mitzvot. Not necessarily true. A person could be appreciative of his life even without study, but he won't have a true appreciation for what life is about. If he doesn't understand the Torah, he doesn't know about it, then he doesn't see the real goal for man. So a person's appreciation for life is only in as far as he has a true concept of life. So the more true a person's idea is about life, which means he's learning continuously, and he sees more about the different commands and what is so important about life and all the Torah, then he has more of a thankfulness towards God when he wakes up in the morning. Okay, Benjamin, my pleasure. Right, so when you... Well, elaborate, Steve. What do you mean? Hence the desire to say so many blessings in the morning. See, I think the reason why you say so many blessings in the morning, the question I asked earlier, but in the afternoon and the evening, we don't have that many, is, I mean, let me ask you right now, let me ask all of you, why do you think, being that we came this far, why do you all think that the morning blessings are are so much longer than the afternoon and the evening? What would demand that we should have so much more involvement in prayer in the morning than in the afternoon and the evening? Let me put that question out to you. If you all have the question, just type OK on the screen. Let me make sure you all have the question now. Michael in British Columbia. Or British Cranvoo, BC, Canada. That's one thing you could say is you're trying to say the reason why we have longer blessings in the morning, the longer prayers in the morning, is because we have the whole day ahead of us. Well, look at it from the opposite angle. What do we have behind us? Okay, Tzvi from England. I'll take your question in one moment. I just want to make sure everybody has this current question, all right? Okay, so why are the prayers in the morning like a half an hour, 40 minutes, but afternoon and evening, 5-8 minutes, whatever. That's all it really takes, 5-10 minutes. What do you think the rabbis, Ezra actually, who set up all of our prayers and blessings, what was his thinking? And I believe it's based on this last statement of King Solomon. In the morning, it'll speak to you. What happens in the morning? What is significant? What do we say is significant about the state of a person in the morning? Okay, Gene, South Carolina, elaborate. What do you mean for renewal? What do you mean for renewal? It's truly, we were asleep for 8 hours or so. You may want to say it's similar to death in some way, but how does that answer the question? What demands that we have a greater amount of involvement in prayer in the morning, but not the afternoon and the evening? What do you think? Well, Daryl is saying that we are renewed and should be more thankful. Well, you have to show me that in the text. I'll tell you what I'm thinking. See, the state of sleep, just like at night when you're falling asleep, you're going into an emotional state. So what happens in the morning when you wake up? You're coming out of an emotional state. That means your emotions are still, they've had 8 hours or so, unbridled by your intelligence, unbridled by your sense of morality. Sleep, according to Freud, he calls them the guardians, he says dreams are the guardians of sleep. Meaning when a person has a certain constraint, and the Gemara also says, the Talmud says, if a person goes 7 days without a bad dream, he's called an evil person. Why is a person who goes 7 days without a bad dream evil? You'd think a person who goes 7 days without an evil dream is a great righteous person. Look, he's so great, he doesn't even dream about something negative. No, but that's the false view. Every person has instincts and drives and emotions and needs for satisfactions, whether it's sexual, whether it's appetitive, whether it's interrelational. These are things that are part of our nature, and they'll be there until we die. Sleep is a state where a lot of times what you repress properly during the day because of Torah commands, you have an outlet in your sleep, and that's what the dreams are. You may have wanted to yell at somebody during the day, but you didn't. So you controlled yourself properly. You might find yourself in your dream that you are yelling at the person. So you see the emotion comes out. It guards you to sleep. It allows you to sleep. It allows you to have the rest you need. And it also allows a certain amount of outlet in terms of emotional constraints that you've placed on yourself. But since sleep and the whole state of dreaming is so purely emotional, what is the state when you wake up in the morning? You are still in that very, very emotional state. You're just coming out of being in 8 hours steeped in emotions. Therefore, in the morning, the rabbi has ordained that you should have a longer involvement in prayer, meaning there's more that has to be realigned with truth and Torah concepts when you're coming out of a state of sleep. So in that very fragile moment, when you are now still emotionally riveted and there's all that residue that lingers from that sleep state, which is purely instinctual, so now the rabbi saw this has to be corrected. It has to be redirected. Your person has to get back in control. He was out of control for a whole 8 hours, whatever it was. So they gave you a more lengthy prayers in the morning in order that you start to realign yourself. Even if you can't learn in the morning because you have a job, whatever, this is something you must do. So they gave you a half an hour as a good block of time where you can contemplate and realign your ideas and get back in touch with what the right ideas are. But in the afternoon and the evening, you've been conscious the whole day. So you're not in such a fragile state. So there's not so much of a reminder that you need to have, so to speak. Okay. Let me just see what you wrote here. Okay, Michael, take care. We'll see you the next time. There'll be a class tomorrow, by the way. Rabbi Reuven Mann will be giving the class, but tomorrow's time will be 3:45 in the afternoon, New York time. Just jot that down. It's on the schedule already. All right, so 3:45 is when the class will be. But let's just take a moment and we're just going to wrap up the class now, but just tell me, just type in okay if you get the last idea. Why prayers in the morning are so much longer than the rest of the day? If you have that clear, just type in okay. And then we'll take a few minutes for questions. Very good. Okay, so we can just wrap up, and we'll do the yes tomorrow. We'll take up 23 now. Let's just spend a few moments on the last verse. All right, let me just put it on your screen. And give me 1 second. Because this is actually the reason why we got to this part of Proverbs, was because of the last verse. Okay, so take a look at your screen. This will be the last verse that we'll take up for today. And this is, how we got to this area. For a command is equivalent to a flame, and Torah is equivalent to light. And reproof, meaning rebuke, in moral instruction are the way of life. Okay, so you see again that King Solomon is dividing up. He's saying that commands in Torah, on the one hand, is one thing. They're either equivalent to a flame, and since a command is just one out of 613, so what's a command, an individual command, equivalent to? A single flame. But Torah, the entire system of Torah, he says is light. Okay? And reproof and moral instruction of the way of life. but also the moral discipline, the rebuke that you get in terms of how to control your emotions, that's the way of life. I mean, in terms of living your daily life, Tamar, it's necessary that you have this moral instruction. So Torah gives you ideas in terms of your intelligence, but in terms of your daily life, your life here on earth, moral instruction is necessary in terms of your actions. What are you going to value? What are you going to do? All right, more could be said on that, but I just wanted to make sure that we got to the last verse. But you see that the way of life is connected with moral instruction, meaning your physical life is something which is dependent on having the right morality. But the first part of this verse, he says, the command is flame and Torah is light. Meaning, but look at the first word of this verse. For, in other words, because. But you can't start a sentence with the word because unless you're explaining what he just said earlier. Meaning, if you follow the Torah system and you bind it on your neck and on your heart, it'll have all these benefits to you. Why will they have all the benefits when you're awake, when you lie down, and when you rise up? Why will there be a benefit? Because the command is like a flame and Torah is like light. Meaning there's the aspects of giving you knowledge. That's one aspect. And another aspect is that it's giving you moral discipline. Okay, so you see again, it's dividing up the verse, addressing both parts of the human personality, the intelligence and the emotions. The first part is talking about the intelligence, giving you intelligence of one command or the whole Torah system. And the second part of the verse is talking about the moral restraints of the Torah. That is what will really give a person life. A person can't have life if he's not following. I mean, if he's a person can't have life if he's just following his emotions. He has to have restraint on them. Otherwise, he's going to be led by the emotions, and then his intelligence won't reign supreme. So without setting the stage with the negative commands and all the restrictions on the emotions, you can't have life. So you see a new idea here, and that idea is that the negative commands, the restraints and all of the emotional tendencies that we have. We can't steal. We can't speak bad about somebody. Lashon Hara. Right? We can't do all these things. We may instinctually want to do it at certain times during the day, but we cannot do it because if we let these emotions out, then we're letting the emotions run supreme, and that's going to prevent the intelligence from guiding us. So there has to be a constant work on our emotions, and the Torah tells us exactly where and when. So that's why constant study is necessary. Okay, Tamar, is that clear? Because there's one more question I want to give to you all before we go. I was directing that for Tamar in Florida. That's correct, Daryl. So that what you're saying, Daryl, is actually another verse in the beginning of Mishle, where he says that he says Yiras Hashem Reishis Das. It's a Proverbs 1:7. The fear of God is the beginning of knowledge. Okay, Tamar, good. Yeah, what King Solomon says in 1:7 is that the fear of God is the beginning of knowledge. Why is the fear of God the beginning of knowledge? Because if a person doesn't have the fear of God, meaning their understanding that God is the source of all knowledge, if a person doesn't have that appreciation, then he doesn't think that there's so much out there, and he won't really be standing in awe and yearning to see new ideas. But if a person does have this truth, he understands there's a creator, and he knows that this creator is the source of all knowledge, then that will put a person's it'll place a person in a humble disposition. And humility is necessary, meaning yira, fear. Fear of God is necessary if you're going to learn. Once you have this fear, this recognition that God is the source of all knowledge, then you're going to be so drawn in to want to know more. You admit that you have nothing in terms of knowledge. So that admission that you don't know anything, and that the knowledge is available and that you have to look for it, that's a necessary first step in order to have wisdom. Okay. Now, what is the last idea we'll take up is this thing, you know, the statement I put on the screen. The first half of verse 23. Okay, Tamar, listen, feel free if you want to send an email, even though we may not have a class, But if you discuss, if you're learning something in Proverbs, I see you wrote down 21:16. Feel free to write in, to send an email if you have any questions. Okay. But the last question I have is, what is a problem in the following statement? And it's on your screen in red. For a command is a flame, and Torah is light. Just that part of the segment, verse. Something is inconsistent. He says, again, for a command is a flame, and Torah is light. The parallel is not exact. What should King Solomon have written? If a single command is a flame, what should Torah be? Should Torah be a light, or should Torah be something else? See, if a single command is a flame, then it should have said Torah, which is all the commands, is a torch. It should have been consistent. The parallel should have been exact. You see what I'm saying? If you're equating one command with one flame, then you must equate numerous commands with numerous flames, meaning a torch. But he's not saying that. King Solomon is saying the Torah is the product. He's talking about light. Why doesn't King Solomon say, and the Torah is a torch? A torch would be, a torch to Torah would be equivalent to a flame to a command. So you see what I'm saying? The parallel is not exactly the same. If you're talking about one command being equivalent to the element of a flame, the substance of a flame, then the Torah should be also equivalent, but just more flames. He should still be talking about flames when he talks about, because the Torah is many commands, so it should be many flames. But he doesn't know. He talks about the result. The product is light. Light is not the flame. Light is something which is the result of a flame, or many flames. Okay, so Lee is suggesting perhaps he uses light in the sense of guidance. I agree, 100% Lee. Meaning, but there's more to it. The fact that King Solomon is not saying that the Torah is many flames, but it's light, he's trying to show because it's not a true equation. It's not exactly the same. Because it's like this. If a person just keeps one command, all right, there's a benefit to one command. But that's only equivalent to like a little bit of light. A little flame in his life. But he doesn't really have light. He doesn't really have what's necessary to guide him throughout his life. One command is not sufficient to guide you. It doesn't have the guiding quality. So therefore, he doesn't call it a light. It's only a one flame. You could be outside and it's dark, you have one flame, that's all it is. But it doesn't really light up where you are. It doesn't light up your environment. But if you have the entire Torah system, not only is it many flames, but then that's what's necessary to have true light. If you're not going to be following the whole Torah system, you're missing out. Even if you leave out one mitzvah of the Torah, you don't have light. It's only when you're following the whole system, because God said every one of these commands is necessary for a person's well-being, for your happiness. Don't think you have the rights to pick and choose. Here you see an argument against those people who say, well, I just follow these commands because these are comfortable with. Well, you wouldn't go to a doctor and then the doctor says, here, take 10 pills. And if you take these 10 pills every day for the rest of your life, you'll live forever. Only a fool will say, well, I don't like the color of this pill. I'm only going to take 9 of them. Well, the person's going to drop dead because he's saying that he knows better than the doctor, which is not true. All right. So therefore, just like a person is going to admit ignorance about what a doctor knows, certainly you have to admit ignorance in terms of what God knows. And if God is saying that every single command is necessary, if you follow the whole system, only then will you have the real true light. A person should do that. You could take an analogy from our case of the doctor. But you see, now we understand why King Solomon doesn't say it's in a direct comparison. It's not a 100% accurate parallel, because it isn't. There is no real exact parallel between a person that keeps one command or a person who keeps all of the commands. A person that keeps one command has a benefit, for sure. It's a flame. He's got something. But there's no real light until he keeps the whole system. Only when you're keeping the whole system, and that may take time, but that's all right. God understands that. But when a person really does that, and he studies, and he starts to keep the whole system as much as he's learned to that point, Now he has something more than just flames. Now he has a guiding light, like Lee said. Now you have something which is going to open up every area of life. It's a whole qualitatively different life, because it's now addressing every single part of his life when you keep all the commands. Now you're not leaving any stone unturned. Now you're not leaving any part of your personality unaddressed. When your entire personality and all your areas of knowledge are being addressed, only then can you really speak about that person as really having true light. Okay. All right. Okay, so if that's clear, we'll just type an okay on screen, and we're going to wrap it up for today, unless there's any questions. But for now, just to confirm that the answer is clear, just type an okay on your screen. And also, if you have any questions, feel free to jot them in. They could be on this subject. There's something else that you're studying right now you have a question on. We'll just take a few questions right now. And again, there'll be a class tomorrow. Rabbi Reuven Mann will be giving a class from his school at 3:45. And we'll broadcast it by speakerphone. So you could be happy to join that class. 3:45 tomorrow. That's New York time. 3:45 p.m. New York time. Okay, Benjamin, you can find the commands. You have to get yourself a Torah that has. I guess you can get the English. I'm assuming that you're not well versed in Hebrew at this point. But you can purchase a Torah. I'll put on screen right now the name of a website that you can peruse and see if you can order a Torah, an English Torah with a Rashi's commentary. Okay, tomorrow, I'll give you my email here. Okay, I just put it on screen for you tomorrow. Okay, but Benjamin David, take a look at the website, artscroll.com. You can look at that site and order a Torah. The five books of Moses. You also want to get prophets and writings. You can get that all in one volume. Yeah, of course, Benjamin. Yes, for sure. Okay, if there's any questions, type them in. If not, we're going to wrap up the class. Doesn't look like there's any questions. Okay, so keep yourself posted. Look at the schedule that's on the live classes link, and you'll see when the next classes are. I believe we have one on Monday and one on Tuesday, but remember, Monday's class, tomorrow's class, 3:45 p.m. New York time. My pleasure, Gene. Okay, Moshe, I look forward to hearing from you after the class, and I wish everybody else a good day, and until tomorrow, enjoy. Okay, take care to everybody.